No. It's Iowa.
Jeff, tell me, I know you stayed up late. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Heart of Sports with Jason Springer and Jeff Cohen, powered by ELEC 825.
We started the show by saying I stayed up late.
I know you stayed up late.
Which means that I can just take a nap right now and make you do the show.
Pretty much.
All right.
Can I finish the rest of the read to start the show before we get into it?
All right.
We're thrilled to join you on WWDB 860 AM, part of the Beasley Media Network, ready to help you move into the weekend, talking about all the news in the world of sports. Again, the big news, Jeff stayed awake to watch Field Dreams last night. Glad we could do the show together.
Big highlight on CNN tonight.
Tell me, though. Okay. Yeah, you're
a
movie
guy.
You
ruined a very touching moment. I tear up every time I hear that. Hey, Dad, do you want to have a cat?
I thought you were just excited to be here with me.
No. Well, that I tear up for different reasons. and instead of you letting me just enjoy that beautiful moment from that amazing movie, you had to point out that I stayed up late.
I didn't think facts were embarrassing things. But, okay, tell me your thoughts on watching a game in a cornfield. I loved it. It was clearly
watching a game in a cornfield. Look, you just emotion, dude. You just turned the Field of Dreams game into basically Children of the Corn with a baseball.
No, I thought it was.
And again, I just made a reference probably
that nobody
people don't
understands.
Even know. And I will tell you, anybody who has never seen Children of the Corn, watch it, and then you will not sleep for like
You're
a year.
Always good for a reference nobody knows anything about.
Oh,
you
I'm
had
sure
to love
know.
It, though, with the players coming out of the corn to start the game. And
well, Kevin Costner came
Kevin
out.
Kevin Costner
corn.
Coming out, and they clearly like.
And he hammed it up.
He took his time.
Yep.
They had everything ready.
He looked around like he didn't know where he was.
Now, we're going to get to JP Doug Hammer in a minute because you end up watching the CONCACAF game rather than the Field of Dreams game. JP will be so proud that you chose that. I'm going to bring him on. JP Della Camera, we were talking about Field of Dreams game last night, but the fact is, Jeff didn't watch most of it. He has his eyes on the CONCACAF game. You'll be so proud of him. How you doing?
That's good. That's great. I'm glad he was watching it. A fun game to watch, not so much the result, you know, but the game itself was good. It was very competitive, and I think the Union were kind of hard done by two things that did not go their way. You know, one is the deflected goal, and the other is the penalty kick, and you can argue whether it's a penalty kick or not if you'd like. You know, the fact is the referee did reverse his decision, which was the decision on the field. But even more so than that, I think people are talking more about that than the mistake, unfortunately, that Martinez made that led to the challenge that he made, you know, when he gave the ball away in a bad spot on the field. You know, the one thing, and Jose is a terrific player, so I'm not picking on him, but, you know, that is a mistake. But, you know, the one thing we've always said about these Mexican teams, and especially a Club America, in MLS, you can get away with some of these giveaways. You can give up the first goal, like you did against New England and other teams, and you can come back. You do that on the road against a good Mexican team. I don't care whether it's their preseason or they're three games in or halfway through or whatever it is. They'll punish you, you know. So when they gave up that first goal, the chances were probably more likely that Club America would get a second goal before the Union would get one. That's how good teams punish you for mistakes.
You know, one of the things that I was surprised at, probably because I don't watch a lot of the Mexican teams play, is the physicality of the game. Do you think the Union was ready for that kind of physicality?
Absolutely, yeah. I think you could tell me, you know, who the fittest teams are in MLS, and you know you could debate who is the most fit, but I guarantee you that the Union are right up there. They're supremely fit, ready from a health standpoint to compete, and they are used to the physical play. MLS is a very physical league, so they're not surprised at all. They were ready for it. They matched them. I think, you know, when you talk about physical play, one of the things that we've seen with the Mexican clubs and the Mexican national team, they'll do anything to try to get you off your game. So you want to call it gamesmanship, whatever you want to call it, whether it's an extra hit after a whistle, whether it's a little extra nudge here, an extra nudge there, something that looks unintentional but probably was intentional, they do that, and that's to their credit, you know? I mean, the U.S. will do that, And MLS teams will do that as they become more experienced in the international games. But I don't think for a minute that the Union were caught off by any physical play, and I thought they matched them physically toe-to-toe throughout the night.
Do you think the Union's going to go out and hire the Flyers' dentist for games?
Wow. I mean, that's – well, if you had high-definition television, you probably saw even the size of the tooth, right? I mean, that's a hockey hit, right? I mean, not a hockey hit, but a hockey type of an injury. You know, we see that all the time in hockey where, you know, you'll see a tooth come out of a player's mouth in an NHL game. But yeah, that one was tough. I didn't get an update on what happened after that. I doubt that that's why he came out of the game. He looked dazed to me, and I don't want to speculate on any of that stuff, but I think he took another hit later. He's a tough player, and the way he played after the tooth came out and his reaction indicated that he was past that. So hopefully he is okay. But that's why they had taken him out. I doubt it was for the tooth. I haven't read any update, though, on it, so I'm not sure.
You know, we talk about how physical the game was. Were you surprised there was no foul there?
What, was there a foul? There was just no card.
No, there was no foul. There was no penalty, no nothing.
I would say yes.
Yeah.
It was late at night. You know, when I was watching, and so I was more concerned
my bedtime.
That he was down. Yeah, mine too. I was more concerned that he was down, you know, for as long as he was down, and that I didn't know what the injury was at first, you know, before I saw the replay and the tooth came out. You know, I didn't know what it was. I knew he got hit in the face, in the mouth. I thought there was blood, but I didn't know about the tooth, you know, that came flying out. But you can only imagine how painful that is.
Yeah.
You know, like on impact one, and then, you know, once the tooth is out, I mean, it must be painful.
And everything about that has to be off. Okay, so they lose 2-0. Can they, obviously they have the rematch at Subaru Park coming up in September. Can they make up the deficit next month with the roster they have going into that game?
I think that they can. A 3-0 deficit, I'm optimistic, but against a team like Club America, I wouldn't have given the Union that much of a chance. But 2-0, sure they could. Could they beat Club America 3-0? I don't think that's the thought here. But I think you can beat them 2-0 in your place and then set the stage for extra time, right? One thing is that's tricky. You know, everybody is saying, you know, when they didn't press last night, of course they wouldn't press last night, not at altitude and, you know, not away from home. And knowing that they needed to keep the score down. But at home, I'm hearing some people say, well, they're going to go for it. They're going to high press. I don't know what they're going to do because, first of all, the second leg is not till another month from now, right? So I don't know how they're going to play. But remember, you know, the weight of the road goal. So you can't give Club America a goal, right? So if it ends up 2-2 on aggregate, you know, Club America is going through because of the road goal, right? So you can't get involved in a game like that where you need this, right? You can't give up the road goal because then it just makes the mountain that much higher. And especially if you give up that road goal early in the game, now you're looking at not only 3-0 down aggregate, but a road goal too. So if they open it up, if they high press, you know, it's got to be risk reward, I would think. I mean, you can't just go for it blindly because of the consequences of how important that road goal would be to Club America.
So when I watched that game last night and when I've been watching the Union lately, there's a player missing and I'm baffled as to why and what happened to him. Montero was such a big part beforehand. What happened to him?
Great question. He was suspended, first of all, though, for last night. I don't know if you had heard that on the broadcast. I had known he was suspended, so was Matt Real. So they were not eligible to play as of last night, right? They couldn't have played in those games, no matter what. Montero's thing is tricky in the sense that I don't have inside information as to what happened. I only know, you know, what I have read. You know, it indicated that there was a family problem, right? That he was separated from his family because of COVID and, you know, them not being in this country. I'm not sure where they are, first of all. But when they said he was in transfer talks, you know, that implies that it's very vague. You know, he's in transfer talks to me only means that he's involved in something that could happen, not involved in something that will happen necessarily, right? Because what if those transfer talks fail? Now what do you do, right? So my expectation all along has been we are either going to hear that he was transferred to another club overseas, or my opinion is that whenever the next game is next week, I think he's going to be coming back.
Without him out there, we've seen some of the young kids get time, particularly the last MLS game the team played before CONCACAF. They had three of their really young prospects out there with Sullivan and Aronson, Aronson getting his first goal. What's your thought of what you've seen from the young guys coming in and what this roster is going to look like? They continue to make moves and tweaks.
Yeah, I'm impressed with it. And the thing about Jim Curtin, he's always been about this. It's always about the team. It's not one individual. So you could tell me if you want that Montero is their best player. And I'll buy that if you want to sell that to me. But is he irreplaceable? No, I don't think he's irreplaceable at all. You know, I think the team as an organization has shown that, sure, they can do okay without him. And I'm not minimizing it because I think he's a terrific player. But if he doesn't play, that means Gazdag plays in his normal spot at a number 10. It means that you don't have to sit out somebody else like a Leon Flock, perhaps, you know, because of Montero in there. And it also stops the progress maybe of a Quinn Sullivan, Jack McGlynn, you know, now Paxton Aronson from what we saw the other day. So I think, you know, you try to take something positive out of what was a negative, right? I mean, Montero is a terrific player. Whatever has happened or whatever is going on doesn't negate that. He's a terrific player. And I hope he's back for next Wednesday against NYCFC. If he's not, you know, and he has moved on, I still feel very confident with Gazdag at the 10, you know, Flock being where he is, more minutes for Sullivan, more minutes for McGlynn, more minutes for Aronson. And, you know, they just signed two other players. You know, Jesus Bueno is going to be in. Last I heard, he was not in yet. I think there's a visa situation. But Dabo is here, and we might see him as soon as next Wednesday. I didn't see his name last night on the roster. They only dress 18 there. But I was told he was eligible to play if they needed him. And I think, you know, we don't get to watch training anymore because of COVID situations. But I believe Dabo did have a few sessions, you know, with a team before they left. So I think that Dabo gives them another skilled player up top. Bueno gives them more depth in the midfield. And if Montero does, in fact, come back, those are great decisions for Jim Curtin to have to make.
All right, I'm going to take you across the pond, if you don't mind, because while there may be nobody that's irreplaceable here, Messi is irreplaceable. And I am very confused about the whole thing because the number, I heard everything, but I texted you about this. I am baffled that of the stories that Barcelona is somehow close to $1 billion in debt. How do these teams get in these situations and still exist?
I think financial fair play is an oxymoron, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's such a thing as financial fair play because how do some of these teams do it and not get penalized, right? I mean, how is this possible that a team of that stature could be in debt the way that they were, or that some teams have had sanctions because they went, you know, above and beyond the financial fair play? Unless somebody opens up their books publicly, you know, I'm very leery, very suspect of all of this. To me, there's a lot of things that don't smell right, you know, about the Messi situation. I believe in the tears from him. I don't think he really wanted to leave Barcelona. I don't. But how could Barcelona have been bringing him back in there knowing that they really couldn't have signed him unless they were told by La Liga, you know, stay the course, you know, we'll figure this out. You know, we'll get this in some way, somehow we'll get this done. And then something happened. I don't know when the real story will come out, but to me, there's details that are that are sketchy, that don't make sense to me. How did Messi and his team agree to a contract this quickly when the whole world was told when last Friday that he was not going to be going back to Barcelona, and then on Monday we're hearing, well, he's already signed with Paris Saint-Germain. I mean, a deal like that doesn't get done in 2 days.
I'm just glad you pronounced the team that he's going to there, because I totally would have butchered
Paris Saint-Germain?
Yeah.
You can say PSG. PSG is what most people call it, but they're the odds-on favorite now to win the Champions League. I'll make the safe prediction that the number 30, I'm told, he's going to wear, jersey, will be the largest-selling one there is in the world, and that whatever money they're paying him, whether it's 30 million, 40 million, whatever it is, they'll make that in the jersey sales. So there's no, you know, there's no issue with that. But, you know, the whole deal doesn't smell right to me. And I'm a Messi fan, same with Ronaldo. But in the Messi-Ronaldo debate, I've always said Messi's the guy for me. But last year, when they were talking about him wanting to leave, as much as I love the story of a player staying with one team for his entire career, and that's why I was saddened to see Tom Brady leave, you know, the Patriots when he did, and other great names from the past that have left that couldn't finish their career in those cities, right? I thought the only way Barcelona can save themselves is to sell Messi, because he said he wanted to go, and if they waited until this year, he would have been available for free. Whereas if they had sold him for whatever that price was last year, you know, just throw out a figure, whatever it was, $200 million, I don't remember what it was, but whatever that figure was, that would have not only taken them out of debt, but probably would have taken them from red to black, and they could have replaced Messi with five or six younger players. Granted, it wouldn't have gone over well, but is it going over well now? I don't think it's going over well in Barcelona.
Well, yeah, and it's not just Barcelona. From everything I've read, the entire league will suffer as a result of this one player leaving. Has there ever been any player that has impacted an entire league and set of nations in the sports world the way that what just happened with Messi has?
I'm going to say no, because when I think about all of the great teams that we've had in sports, it's never been about one guy, right? When Tom Brady decides, you know, enough is enough at age 50 or whatever age, you know, he'll play to, the NFL is not going away. They'll be more popular, right? Because by then, everyone will be talking about, you know, the kid that's playing in Jacksonville, right? Or somewhere else, right?
Tom Brady's kid. or the fourth generation of Mannings.
Or Mahomes. Yeah, I mean, they'll be talking about something else, right? But, you know, at one point, it was Messi and Ronaldo. And even though those two teams only played X amount of times per year, man, that was great for the ratings, right? When you had one of those derby games, those Clasico games, when Barcelona took on Real Madrid, right? And then they met sometimes in other competitions. It was must-see television for sure, right? So, you know, I'm sure ESPN's not happy. They just get the rights for that, and they lose, you know, the top guy.
Draw.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, you lose the big player. La Liga is still a fantastic league. And I think, you know, hey, if I'm a La Liga fan, I want to tune into Barcelona because I want to see what's the fan reaction. And I want to see how do they play without Messi? You know, what if they become a better team? You know, what if they spread the ball around better? What if they rely on five guys to lead them instead of one guy? Right. I mean, it could turn out to be a decent story. And if Messi leads Paris Saint-Germain to the UEFA Champions League title, it'll be a great story in France. You know, their TV numbers are going to go up. I don't know what their television deal is, but I can guarantee you somebody's already thinking about how many ways and when and how and where they can get more Messi games on TV.
So just so you know, I just checked, and within 30 minutes, Messi's jersey sold out in the online store. 832,000 copies sold.
Yep, that'll help.
So here's another question for you. How did they get that many jerseys printed that quickly?
You know, that's a good question.
Well, and that goes to your...
There's more to this story, guys.
That definitely...
I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but there's too many things here that don't make a whole lot of sense to me, the speed of which this is going. And you could argue if you want that last year, you know, Paris Saint-Germain wanted to get him. And so, you know, it was easier to make the deal. Whatever you want to say is fine. But, I mean, do we know that he was going to take the number 30? I assume that number is already in the back of the jersey. Otherwise, people wouldn't be buying it. And also, I read that Neymar is number 10, and Neymar offered it to Messi, and Messi said no.
Yep.
Yeah, didn't take it. Before we let you go, I got to ask you, the women and the men real fast. The women,
sure.
Are we seeing a changing of the guard after the bronze in the Olympics? And then the men, are we seeing with their Gold Cup performance being ranked in the top 10 with a roster that probably isn't their main roster, a team that can, you know,
yep,
play in with the World Cup this year?
Yeah. U.S. men are on the rise. This is the best group of young players and the most talented young players that we have ever had. I haven't been around forever, but going back to the 90s, I would say, the only class of players that I could think is close to this was in 2002, Donovan Beasley and some others, but not even in the same neighborhood as this team right now. When you think of how many players are playing regularly, quality minutes with big time clubs, you know, Dest at Barcelona, you know, you've got Gio Reyna at Dortmund. You've got, off the top of my head, Pulisic playing at Chelsea. You know, Tyler Adams is getting regular minutes. A lot of guys are getting a lot of quality playing time on these big clubs, right?
Making an impact with that time.
Yeah. That didn't happen before. So U.S. national team is in a great place, and you've got players like Reyna. I said this on an interview the other day, that he's young enough. He's got at least 3 World Cups in him, right? If he's only, whatever he is, 18, you know, 3 World Cups covers like 12 years. He's fine, you know, and it's the same with a lot of these other players, right? And now we've got, you know, depth at certain positions, and I think, you know, the Gold Cup may have helped us a little bit more in terms of, you know, who's next or where is there more depth. I mean, Matt Turner is making a name for himself that I'm not sure how many people would have said before that Gold Cup started that you would be hearing debate about whether or not, you know, he could play in World Cup qualifying. There was no debate before it. There's certainly debate now based on what I'm hearing.
And with the women, did we see sort of the end of an era with this team that's done so much for women in sports, not just in soccer, with the bronze?
Yeah. I want to be careful with this answer because I think people were disappointed, you know, by the result because we're spoiled by their success. You know, they won a bronze medal, you know, at an Olympics during a COVID year, right? I know all these teams had to deal with it, but here's what I think about the U.S. team. Whether they won the gold or not, yes, this was going to be an end of an era. Just look at the ages. We were saying that at the end of the 2019 Women's World Cup when I think the stat was 12 players over 30, and a few of them were closer to mid-30s, closer to 40, than closer to 30. So you knew a change was coming, right, at some point, but when I started to read what some people were writing, you know, the team was too old. They weren't too old. When you think of age in a tournament, I mean, they were average age was about 30 at the last World Cup. They were one of the oldest teams and they won it. And that was only 2 years ago. But when I think of age affecting a team, regardless of the league, regardless of the tournament, you see the age towards the end, right? Like in the NHL, if you're an old player, those first 3 months, you're fine, right? But now you get to the playoffs or game 70, and now you, if you're an old team, now you can see it, right? At a World Cup, you're not going to see it in game one. If a team is old, you shouldn't see it, right? And the U.S. was bad in game one against Sweden. To me, that's not an excuse that they were too old. And they got a break from the Olympic Committee when they said the reserve players now can count. So instead of having an 18-player roster, now you had the 22, right? So I think there are a lot of factors in this. Part of it, I think, was COVID-related. They couldn't train like they normally did. Not an excuse because other countries are in the same boat, right? But U.S. had a lack of meaningful games because of COVID. They had to play Mexico twice because they couldn't get any other opponent. So I think their preparation was not as good as it had been in the past. no fans in the stadium. I think it affects the U.S. team more than others because I think they play off that energy and that crowd, you know, the isolation. They didn't have family members. Nobody's talking about the Julie Ertz injury because she played, but was that the Julie Ertz that can dominate? I don't think so. You know, she was not at 100%. And when you talk about age, two of the players that did not have a good tournament are two of the best players that they have, two of the most dependable players they have, and both are under the age of 30, and that was Sam Ewis and Abby Dahlkemper. So it was a strange tournament. You know, Tina Davidson, I thought, did well for herself. She started four games. I doubt that was part of the plan going in. So I give them props for getting to a point where that bronze medal meant something to them, and they wanted to go off on a high note. And I'm not saying it was the last game for Carly Lloyd. If it was, she scores twice. I'm not saying it was the last game for Megan Rapinoe. If it was, you know, she scores twice. This game meant something to them. They didn't roll over and think, well, it's gold or nothing. So I give them credit for that. Yeah, there's going to be changes for sure. They are going to get younger, but that was going to happen even if they won the gold medal because, you know, time is ticking right on the clock. And it's been a great, great run. They've won two straight World Cups. They get a bronze medal that ended, what, last week?
Yeah.
I'm track of time here. But they also got a bronze medal. I mean, this has been a fabulous run for this team. And now let's see what some of the younger players can do and see what decisions our individual players make on their own and what decisions that the coach, Zlatko Andonovski, has to make, you know, to tell somebody, if he wants to, you know, that this is it. You know, it's time to move on. We're going to change this. Because there's a lot of pressure on that seat. You know, well, you're expected to win, and he knows that.
Well, we always appreciate that we can turn to you for all the soccer news that we need. Look forward to your next call, the Union game, and appreciate the time. JP, you have a great afternoon.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. Jeff, I think JP was just impressed that you stayed up to watch a soccer game last night. That's the moral of that interview to me.
You know, I didn't really think about how much time it takes to sign Messi. But here's another interesting thing. He's also getting a percentage of PSG fan tokens that they're creating, which is a cryptocurrency. How did they do this quickly? It takes much longer than that to negotiate this kind of complex contract.
Look, you're the one that negotiates contracts for a living.
And here's another interesting thing. They made $105 million off of those jerseys. That's how much they sold for. So they made 10. They make 10%. PSG makes 10%. I'm not going to say the whole name.
So how does Barcelona lose $1 billion?
So it's $10.5 million in profit in the first day, and his salary is $40 million. So they made 25% of it in the first 17
He'll
hours.
Pay for himself. Jeff, let's leave the soccer talk there. We'll hit a break. When we come back, we've got Michael Collins to join us to talk some golf.
Operating engineers are the men and women that move mountains. And the Engineers Labor Employer Cooperative, ELEC, puts them to work. They create opportunities for the men, women, and union signatory contractors of Local 825, repaving our roads, keeping our homes bright and warm, and even building our favorite team stadium. We understand infrastructure. That's why ELEC and Local 825 are ready to get to work.
Jeff is still puzzled through the break on how Barcelona...
The whole thing doesn't make sense, and I never thought about it that way, but they somehow did this in a week with all of this complexity to it, and PSG's making a ton of money already.
They are making a ton of money. Anything else jump out about the conversation
with
JP?
Like, has the Union sold 832,000 jerseys all time? Think about the number of jerseys. And I can't get any of them when I try to order it.
I was impressed, by the way. One of the first things that you said to me today was a critique of Jim Curtin's jacket that he wore on the sideline for the game.
No, but wait, let's be clear. I wasn't criticizing his jacket.
No, it was
it's like 150 degrees and he's wearing long sleeves. and looking cool as a cucumber when he does it. I mean, he doesn't even look like he's sweating.
Wow.
It was raining, so I guess it's a little hard to see, but he looks cool as a cucumber on the sideline, doesn't he? He never seems to lose it.
You going to talk some golf now?
Can we?
Well, we definitely can if you want to.
All right.
We got the host of the show America's Caddy on ESPN. America's Caddy himself, as well as local favorite and show favorite, Michael Collins. Michael, thank you so much for joining us.
Boys, it's been too long. That's partly my fault, though. So I missed y'all. I hope everybody's doing good.
I'm following along with what you're doing on Facebook. Don't you worry.
Yeah, I'm tearing up from that intro. First it was the Field of Dreams, and now it's this intro.
I wanted to make sure he sounded good. My man's got he's busy out there.
All right, Michael, we got to ask
you. It's been crazy.
We got to ask you questions about the Open, but they have nothing to do with the golfers. Have you recovered from your dip in the waters in Northern Ireland yet?
No.
What were you? Why? Why did you do that?
There are things that still have not dropped the whole way that they're supposed to drop the whole way.
Nobody told you how cold that water is going to be, Michael.
Whose idea was that?
The good thing, listen, I'm not going to lie. The good thing about it is that my age now, it just means that when I got to go and sit down, I don't have to worry about touching any other water I don't want to touch.
So
you know what I mean? There's a good side. Yeah. You got to look at the positive.
Now, Michael, how am I supposed to follow up with that? Because I was going to tell Jeff that when I grow up, I want to be Michael Collins because he's always with Canelo Alvarez and he's out there with Macklemore and doing all these cool things, swimming with stingrays. And here you are talking about how you froze in the ocean and things haven't dropped.
Well, apparently he's dropped.
Yeah, I think we might have lost Michael there for a second. Vito, can you hear him on the other side? All right, we'll try to get him back in a second.
Well, look, here's your chance. You can be him. You said you always wanted to be like him. Here's your chance.
Canelo Alvarez can knock me out on a golf course.
I would like to see you box. We've seen.
You want to see me do everything that gets me physically injured.
We've seen you play basketball.
Not well.
I've envisioned what it's going to be like when you go to the Union and you play goalie. And so the next thing should definitely be boxing.
I find nothing entertaining about any of these physical fitness challenges.
Who's got longer reach, you or Canelo Alvarez?
Anybody's kangaroo has longer reach.
No, why?
Than me,
why? How tall is he?
Taller than me.
You
most
sure?
Everybody is.
Maybe we could get, you know, we've had Ravina Alvarez, but we can get him to come back.
We can ask because I did see a picture of Michael laid out on the ground with Canelo Alvarez. What is his reach, Michael? Because what I was saying before you said that you froze in the waters and things haven't dropped is I want to be you because you're with Canelo Alvarez and you're out there swimming with sharks and stingrays. Things that, like, I want your life when I get older. What is this going on?
I got bad news for you. I'm never growing up, okay?
So I get no chance.
I don't know who planned on taking my place, but, you know, Peter Pan stayed on the island. So whatever island I'm on, I'm staying.
You're hanging out there.
I'm not gonna lie. It's been, trust me when I tell you, like, I'm the first person to admit and realize that my life is honestly a dream. Like, I'm the luckiest dude in the whole world because of what I get to do. Like, I get paid to goof off with and make new friends.
And right? They like, love you for it.
Well, I believe, and this is what someone else has told me, I treat everyone the same. I don't care what you do for a job. I don't care how much money you make. That's not what makes you cool. That's not what makes you a good person. But if you're a good person, then we're probably going to have a good time together. And so I have enjoyed being able to hang out and meet really good people who just happen to be famous or have really jobs that put them into a famous position. But I'm not going to treat them any different than I treat anybody else. Like my friends, the people that I work with at golf tournaments all the time, like my one buddy, I won't say his name because he always gets mad. He's like, I'm not walking a course with you. I'm like, why? He goes, because someone will stop and you'll talk to them for 10 minutes. And as soon as we walk away, I'm like, you know who that was? I'm like, nope, I don't know. But they wanted to talk. They seemed pretty cool. And we like chatted and had a good time. Okay, so what? Like, why is that a bad thing? I don't understand. You know? And so I treat, regardless of if you are the greatest boxer on the planet today or if you're a guy who, you know, changes out the trash bags at the airport. If you're cool and a good person, we can have a great conversation and have some fun. So I think, you know, that kind of, I hope, and I think it comes across that I'm the same way, whether there's cameras on or
if there's no cameras around whatsoever. I'm the same guy, and I always have been that guy. So it's crazy, though.
Look, there's...
I'm not going to lie. Like, when Canelo says, hey, man, let me give you a ride, because we were in Greenville, South Carolina, and he's like, where are you going next? And I go, I got to go to San Diego for the U.S. Open. I got to go to Torrey Pines. So I'm go out there. He's like, oh, how many people are with you? I'm like, people? I ain't got no crew, man. It's just me. And he laughed. And he
Where's
goes,
your
no,
entourage?
Man, with me. Yeah, I go, it's me by myself. I'm the entourage. I got lots of voices in my head. And he goes, nah, you ride with me. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Say that again. Yeah, no, let me give you a ride.
Well, that's what I saw. I saw the picture you riding on Canelo's jet. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Holding the 20-pound trophy that he won on my lap, which was the rim, which was awesome. But, like, trust me when I tell you, there was not one part of that flight that I wasn't – that I didn't keep looking around like a kid. Like, no, come on, man. This ain't real. There's no way I'm literally flying with Canelo. And we were having a great time, like, just talking – whatever. We were talking what anybody would be talking, like, regardless if we were on – his jet, which just sounds crazy. But see, to take it up a level, then a couple weeks later, what did I do? I played a couple of holes at Eastlake with Rick Ross, the boss, right? And like he brought his all of his Bel Air, all those liquors and champagne and stuff, and then we sat on the back porch and had champagne, doing our thing, and he was going crazy over my Jordans that I wore to play golf with him in. And like
they have spikes on them?
A robe. Yeah, I got Jordans with spikes. The ones that they had actually, they had like tie-dye. They're Jordans with tie-dye on them, and the bottom they say peace on one and love on the other.
Wow.
And they were specifically designed just for when the PGA Championship was at TPC Harding Park in San Fran. So it was a shout-out, Jordan brand shout-out to the summer of 69, the summer of love. So they made Jordans that said peace and love on the bottom, and they had tie-dye on them. And Rick Ross was like, yo, what's up with them Jordans, bro? And I was like, Rick Ross is sweating on my Jordans right now. Like, I'm good. I'm good. You know?
So wait,
and
you're
even though
you're
my
not...
mom and my wife hate it, I'm all the time, I'm like, listen, if it all came to an end and I had to go meet my maker tonight or tomorrow, not going to complain, man. It's been pretty good. But I'm also not going to lie. Like, there's still a lot of stuff on my bucket list that I still want to do and places I want to go and stuff.
So is one of those giving this all up and going back to college like J.R. Smith and playing golf there?
Nope. Nah. Nah, I don't need to go to college. I already know. I already learned what I needed to learn when you go to college. And that is beer before liquor. Never sicker. Liquor, fear, never fear. Like, once I learned that, I'm good. Why would I give
a public service announcement from Michael Collins?
Yeah, my parents paid a lot more money for me to get that advice.
And that's all you learned, right? Yeah, that's the thing. Like,
I don't even know how
to. How much did y'all pay for me to go to college? And how much are you making right now? You'd be like, I don't think the investment was all that good.
I don't even know how to transition to FedEx Cup playoffs from that. How do I even bring it back to golf, Michael? Come on,
well,
man.
Well, here it's easy. The easiest thing is the biggest drama. What's going? The biggest drama going on in golf right now, and that's probably the Brooks and Bryson drama that's going on, and the fact that a guy like Ricky Fowler, probably one of the most popular guys on the PGA Tour, and the one that probably sells more hats and orange pairs of pants and shirts than anybody, is not even going to be in the playoffs. Like, it's crazy to think he's not going to be there. But you know, you got somebody like Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka who are definitely butting heads, and trust me when I tell everyone, it is not fake.
Well, you like, told us this Brooks, a year ago.
Yeah, off camera, Brooks does not like Bryson whatsoever, and now Bryson keeps doing all this stuff that just doesn't help himself at all. When you come out, you're like, you know, I'm not vaccinated because I want to save it for everybody else. You'd be like, for a dude that's called the scientist, you are scientifically stupid. when it comes to giving it. At least if you're going to say so, like, at least give out true information. Like, don't just be making stuff up. You know what I mean? Like, my mom got the vaccination, but I want to make sure people like my grandparents have enough. You'd be like, I don't think you've done your research there, partner. Like, and you just got COVID. You're like, but I'm healthy. So, like, have you not watched any news at all? Like, not, even if it's news you think is fake, they're all saying the same thing, right? Like, I don't quite understand.
Well,
you're like walking into a wildfire and being like, you know what? It's not all that hot. You're standing in a fire, dummy.
Well, there's two problems with this. First of all, he seems to have no friends on the tour, at least none that are vocally supportive of him. Now you have players that are complaining on social media that he's not even yelling out four when he hits an errant shot. It seems like,
well,
the bad boy image is going a bit too far.
Well, here's the thing. So you got one guy who's like Brooks Koepka, who's like more, he started to seem like a bully
because
he was the one who was always starting stuff with Bryson. And then you got Bryson, who's the guy who doesn't help himself by saying stupid things and putting himself in stupid positions.
Now, against when it his comes own sponsor.
Well, that's the thing. Like, maybe you don't say my equipment sucks when they're writing you a check.
I love that the sponsor responded, though. As a comms person, well, I love that they did not lay down with that.
Well, here's what the thing was. You said that about the equipment when the guy who had caddied for you the week before was the guy who makes your equipment, like who works for you. So you're basically not just ripping the company. You're ripping the dude that you needed to caddy for you because your caddy quit. Like, dude, are you serious? That'd be like, if you say something like, go home and tell your wife you think she looks fat and then be like, yo, can I get some later? Be like, and then act surprised. Like, I don't understand why she wouldn't give me none. Really? You just called her fat and then was like, you want to do it? No, I don't want to do it. I don't want to look at you. Get out the bedroom. Like, yeah. And then you, I don't understand. Or just then you got to do the whole, I just want to apologize if I may have offended you. I was mad at myself. And, you know, I called you fat because I was looking in the mirror myself and I'm fat. So it's not really you, it's me. Well, you're still not getting none, but thank you for the apology.
You're going to go with, right? It's not you, it's me. That's going
to
work.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing for Bryson. But I will say this, when it comes to yelling four, like 60 of everyone on tour, the fairway only gets hit 60% of the time. So every single day, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, there's probably 860 golf balls that off the tee are going towards people. And you think all 864 of them are yelling four?
No, that's my point. Now, that my point is that everybody's attacking him.
Right. And here's the other thing you got to remember when it comes to Bryson. That time he didn't yell four was also after so many people following him were kept yelling out Brooksy. They were taunting him by yelling Brooks. And calling him Brooksy. So guess what? Even if I'm him, if I snipe one into the crowd and I think it's going towards the dudes that are yelling Brooksy, meh.
Oops.
Maybe it kicks off of y'all noggin into the fairway. And so, then when I'm walking up, I ain't signing the glove. And I'd be like, hey, when you wake up, remember it was Brooksy that hit you. Because on the back of their ticket, they're responsible for getting hit. It ain't the player's fault. So that's, you know, after a dude like that, like once he's had enough and people are just being over the top brutal, then maybe stay behind him when he's on the tee box.
I'm curious, though, how does Bryson's both vaccination status and his feud with Koepka and the way other people feel about him, how will that influence the Ryder Cup picks in a few weeks?
It won't.
Okay.
It won't at all. That's one of those things where when people are trying to come up with stuff, hey, man, we got to write, how is Bryson on the team going to – how is that going to work? Like, is him and Brooks going to be able to be in the same room together? And are they going to be able – like, what happens if they're on a bus and this and that? And it's fake drama. That part is fake drama because think about this. We all have people that we work with where we don't get along with and we don't like, but you still go to work every day. You still see that person.
I come in here and hang out with Jeff all the time. And
there you go. You got to deal with him every single day, man. Right? And you're like, oh, man, two more hours. But then you know what you get to do? Like on a day like today when it's Friday, you're like, man, look at that clock. I almost don't have to see this knucklehead for a lot of hours, which would be
wow.
Awesome.
That's not even the first time I've been called a knucklehead.
There you go. Well, for the Ryder Cup, it's even bigger. And I'm going to tell you guys something. I'm not going to say any names because I'm not at liberty to. But the little feud between Bryson and Brooks is nothing. But there was a long time ago, there were guys on the Ryder Cup, and one of the guys had slept with the other guy's wife.
Yeah.
You think that might have caused a little bit of tension? Like, now, here's the kicker. The couples never split up. They stayed together, even though everybody knew. So you think that bus ride might have had a little tension on it? And guess what? You don't hear any reports of two guys getting in a fight on the Ryder Cup team. And I didn't say whether it was Europe or America. So I'm not saying which team it was on.
You're just broadening that potential audience.
All I'm telling you is, I want everybody to be sure, be like, everyone's going to run and start checking one team over another.
Yeah. Google's going to blow up.
I didn't say one team over another. I'm just saying, like, for two guys that just don't get along and don't like each other, the thought of, well, how's that going to affect, that's nothing. Like, if two guys can be on the same team and one guy slept with the other guy's wife and almost caused them to split up, and you think Bryson and Brooks is going to cause, get out of here.
Well, what you could do is, now that the PGA has this bonus based on social media and stuff like that and how many hits, if you gave out the guy's name, he would probably make a lot of money right now.
Oh, no. No.
Not enough to pay the alimony, but.
You know what would also be great? It would be great then if you sent me a job application. I could then come be like, hey, welcome to the team. Now you're only working two hours a day.
Just looking for somebody.
All that fun stuff you used to get to do, yeah, you're not doing that no more. I might as well just start saying how I'm setting mouse traps all around my house and just killing mice. Don't you work for a mouse? Yeah, I hate them. You're like, come on.
We got something else for you, though. But we can now make you the next Eagles expert, as probably one of the greatest Eagles fans. Did you have the chance, with all the golf and all the fun things you're doing, did you have a chance to watch a little preseason football yesterday?
I only got to see about 8 plays total, because of all the stuff that, I mean, I'm also, since I'm finally home and have not been home for a long time, we're in the middle of doing a whole looking for another place to move and all this other stuff. Anyway, I only got to see probably 8 plays, but I was encouraged. I would say that I am optimistically pessimistic. I'm like every Eagle. I'm like all of us, right? We always look at the Eagles. For me, watching the Eagles right now is like watching a guy on the driving range. When you come off the driving range on the golf course, you're like, yo, this dude didn't miss a shot. Tiger Woods did that at Valhalla. Remember when he first had his first micro dissectomy back thing and he was gone and then just showed up at the PGA Championship and everyone was like, what? This dude just shows up at a major? And I'll never forget, Pat Perez walked off the driving range, who I did a show with, and I was like, bruh, I was watching Tiger 2, and he was like, that fool's going to win this week. I'm like, what? He goes, he didn't miss a shot. And then he goes out there and can't hit one golf shot on the golf course. We call that Ranger Rick. Ranger, you a Ranger Rick all-star. Like, you go on the driving range, and you're like, this dude is never going to lose a golf tournament. And then on Thursday, you're like, this dude's not even going to finish on Friday. He's going home before Friday's over. He got no chance. And that's kind of how I look at the Eagles in the preseason, especially now the way that the preseason is going to work. We're going to learn even less about this team. And we're going to see flashes of greatness, and we'll see some flashes, but it's not going to be until week 2 or week 3 that we really go, all right, we legit got a team that might be okay. Or by week 3, we'll be like, well, it'll be awesome if we win a game or two. Here's my question to you guys. Let me ask you this, because I always ask my friends this question, because this is troubling to me. Would it be better to have a team that sucks right? But so when they win, you're like, that was awesome, they won. Or would you rather have a team that kind of gives you hope and kind of makes it to the first round of the playoffs all the time, but you know they're never going to win big,
so
right?
It's funny.
Like, which is better?
It's funny because going into this season, I have, like, no expectations, so I feel like I can't be disappointed. So
me too. That's how I feel.
Like, I got,
when people are like, what do you think your Eagles are going to do? I was like, I don't care.
Don't matter.
I mean, I care, but it's like, if they suck, cool. But, like, I still got the tattoo, not getting that removed, right? Like, I know we're going to be building. I know there's some things that we got to do. So I'm like you. I don't have any real crazy high expectations. I would love to see Jalen Hurts look good. I would love to see Miles Sanders continue to grow as a running back and, like, get better. But, again, I think this year, too, winning the NFC East this year is like I said last year. That's like winning skinniest kid at fat camp. Like, you're still at fat camp. All right? Like, awesome. I won the least ugly in an ugly contest. Well, I was still in an ugly contest.
Okay.
So
how many of your Eagles friends texted you last night after the Joe Flacco touchdown, overreacting that Joe Flacco should be the starting quarterback? Because that's how you
None
know Eagles fans.
Because I was
None
out, I was
no.
out someplace,
None.
And that you, there was definitely nah. the one person who goes, Flacco should be the starter.
Nah. All of my Come friends on, know better than to send me that because I would rip them a new one.
Well, they were thinking it. They just didn't hit send.
If they sent me something stupid like that, well, they know. They must have learned already. You send me something stupid like that, I'll put it on social media. Like, I'm going to share this with 40,000 of our other closest friends how stupid you are.
Well, I look forward to following yeah. where you go next on social media. Michael, so glad you could get a few minutes to catch up with us. We always enjoy getting some time. Good luck with everything you're following next. Can't wait to see your
wait,
videos.
I got a final question. You got any kind words for Cowboys?
Come on.
You got any kind words for Cowboys?
What, Dallas Cowboys?
Yeah.
No, I didn't. I'm trying to figure out. So I asked my 12-year-old if we're going to go back up to the Eagles-Cowboys game again this year, because last year we went to the game and I felt like I was a bad parent, but I was very proud at the same time. Like, you know how weird that feels when your 12-year-old is chanting along with the crowd, Dallas sucks, Dallas sucks. And I'm filming it and looking at him, and he's so excited to be yelling it. And at the same time, I'm like, I am such a bad parent for allowing this, but it feels kind of good.
What age did he start?
So happy.
What age did he start the Dallas sucks chant?
Man, I don't know. Well, you know what? I live in Florida, so our child services won't come here to the house. I got 5.
Yeah, see, I've got a 1.5-year-old and a 4.5-year-old, so I'm trying to figure out what's too young to start teaching them that. Like, if I teach the 1.5-year-old that, my wife will definitely give me some side eye.
Oh, yeah. No, 1.5 is too young. They won't get it. But at least with the 4.5 to 5, when my boy was 5, I showed him video of Eagles, Cowboys, and because he's now big Eagles fan with me. And so he could understand when the crowd started doing the chant that they were taunting Dallas and the Dallas fans. But if you do it too young, that like a 1.5-year-old won't know when it's not appropriate to use, right? Like, you don't
go around
be,
telling everybody that.
You know,
yeah. Preschool.
And the Lord said, Dallas!
Well, look.
You'd be like, whoa, no.
Michael.
Wifey, that's another one. I will
contact you for some parenting advice on how to handle this situation, and we always look to having you back on for the golf. Thanks so much for the time, man.
Anytime. New episode of America's Caddy comes out next Friday on ESPN+. And that's the one with Canelo. I race BMWs with Anthony Anderson.
Oh, man.
Troy Mullins is in it, and I get to eat Maryland blue crab with Cal Ripken Jr.
You're See? Kidding.
I know my life is so stupid. Nah.
Uh-huh. You believe you just said that out loud, Michael? That's your life.
No, I know. That's what trust me when I tell you, like, hey, what did you do? Well, I had Maryland blue crab with Cal Ripken Jr.
Yeah, no big deal.
BMWs with Anthony Anderson, and I hung out with Canelo Alvarez. Good night. Thanks for coming out.
Thanks, Michael.
Why so many people
you just dropped
you
the mic.
Media. I don't get it.
Yeah, I got. Right. Yeah, I introduced you as best as I could. You took it out as best you could. Michael, you have a great one.
Thanks, y'all too. Have
Take
a great
it easy.
Weekend.
Jeff, I can't beat that. I don't have barreling crabs with Cal Ripken.
Why don't you become his caddy?
I have to be strong enough to hold the bag for 18 holes on the golf course to do that.
And hold that big trophy, right?
No, that trophy was huge. If you saw that picture,
yeah,
it was enormous. He's sitting in the seat on the jet plane, and I'm looking at it going, dude's got Canelo Alvarez, like, framing pictures of him knocking him out on the ground on the green, and then he's on his private jet holding his big trophy.
I want the Jordans. Where do you get those?
He's got so many sweet shoes. Oh, yeah. I'll send you some. They're cool.
You'll send me the shoes or the pictures?
Well, hey, look, I finally got you something. Yeah. We didn't even mention it during the show.
Yes, you did.
I finally got something for my son. For your son.
We're just using it to prop up the camera.
We are using it. It was 45 seconds left. I was at Roy Halladay's retirement game. We'll talk more about that on with Greg Dobbs on next week's show.
Yeah.
But I did get you a souvenir, which is significant because we've been doing the show for many years now, and I don't think I've ever gotten you anything before. So it wasn't for me.
So if it makes you feel better, it still doesn't count, right?
Well, I tried.
Yeah.
I tried.
My son thanks you.
20 seconds left. What else you got? We didn't get to much of it.
It must be killing you that there are sports that we did not get to discuss.
I prepare a whole large document,
yes,
and we got through nothing. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us this week. Make sure to join us next Friday night to help you start your weekend in style. Have a great one, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.